David has said a little bit about me. I've been leader of the FIEC for 12 years. In terms of my experience, just so you know a little bit of my experience, I've primarily been a church planter. So over my ministry, I planted two churches. One of those churches was in a city centre, in a city called Birmingham, a city of 2 million people. It was a church that had a ministry particularly to students and young people. We began with about 25 people, all of whom were pretty much under 25, except for me, who was 30. And the church in that context grew very rapidly. So over a couple of years, we grew from being 25 people to about 250 people. And the church then continued to grow. And over the years, we became a church that then planted churches. But actually, we also began then to be a church that revitalized churches. So in our city context, there were lots of sort of a particularly declining Brethren churches that sort of had aging congregations. And a number of us had been preaching in those churches. And over time, opportunities became available because we built relationships to revitalize those churches. So we sent leaders, we sent people to those churches. And at least two churches that would probably have died have now got thriving congregations because we were able to provide leadership and send people. And I was speaking at the church day away of one of those churches just last week, a church that was small and elderly and now has 150 people coming to it and has been revitalized for about sort of 7 years. So that's a really encouraging element there. The second church I planted was in the town I now live in, which is called Market Harborough. It's a small market town of about 25,000 people. We began a church with people who were commuting from the town to other churches in surrounding cities. And that church, it's been going for about 12 years, has been much harder to grow and much slower, basically because there aren't any people between 18 and 25. It's a town where everybody leaves. I don't think that's me, that's you. It's a town, so I'm worried there. It's a town where everybody leaves when they reach 18 and they go to university. We've grown partly through a sort of a small number of conversions, but also through people moving to the town for jobs and for lifestyle when they have kids. So it's been a much harder context. And I think one of the things that has taught me is how important context is to church growth and expectations. When I moved from Birmingham to Market Harborough, I thought that planting a church would be the same, that we could begin, gather the people, and it would grow quickly. And I had to learn it wouldn't be like that. I found that pretty difficult because of the difference in context. I also led a church that did some revitalization. At one point in my ministry, I was a member of a Brethren church that was in effect being revitalized. And I and various others were serving in the church. We were growing, we were drawing people in. But it became very difficult because the leaders of the church, even though it was growing, didn't want to change. Actually, what had happened was that the leaders of the church, and I didn't realize this, had a vision for becoming a much more charismatic church. And there was a point at which they told us, you're the wrong kind of people to have come. So even though the church was growing, they didn't want the change that would have been necessary. So I've been in that situation as well. So that's just a little bit of background of my ministry so you can know where I'm coming from. Let me just read from sort of God's word. And I want to read from 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 19 to 23, which I think are crucial verses about the importance of culture and ministry. Paul writes there, though I'm free and belong to no one, I've made myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. To the Jews, I become like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I become like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law, I become like one not having the law, though I'm not free from God's law, but I'm under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. To the weak I become weak, to win the weak. I have become all things to all people, so that by all possible means I might save some. I do all this for the sake of the gospel, that I might share in its blessings. Those verses seem to me to emphasise the vital importance of culture for ministry and the vital importance of contextualising the gospel. And we have to appreciate culture actually for all of gospel ministry. Understanding the culture is essential for pastoring and leading even a growing, thriving large church. It's essential to effective planting, and I think it's also essential for revitalization. And so much of the way that we go about revitalization, how we expect that to happen, what we think the results will be, very much depend on culture and understanding the culture in which we're ministering. And that's really the big thing I want to communicate, is that our method of revitalization and our expectations of revitalization need to take account of the culture. One of the reasons that I think that's so important is so much of the literature on church revitalization comes from America. There's lots of American literature on church revitalization. But I think America is a fundamentally different context from the situation of most of us in Europe. America is still a very religious country with, in some ways, a Christian background. Something like 28% of people in America identify as evangelicals. In America, there are large numbers of unchurched people who call themselves Christians or call themselves evangelical. And that means in America, in many situations, but not all, where you have a church revitalization, if a church is revitalized and, for example, there is new leadership, better music, better preaching, church is done better and there's an attempt to connect with the community, often the church will grow quite quickly because there are people to draw on who are looking for a church or happy to come back into a church. In many cases in Europe, I think that simply isn't the case. So in many cases in Europe, church revitalization is often like church planting, only harder. With church planting, you have the privilege of starting from scratch with no culture to overcome, no older leaders to replace, no traditions to overturn. That's why lots of people think church planting is easier. But there isn't a field of people who are ex-evangelicals or have drifted from church to kind of be gathered by simply doing ministry better. Does that make sense? And I think that's just the reality for church revitalization in Europe. It's therefore much harder and slower and likely to be smaller. Now, I think church revitalization is essential. It is an essential gospel strategy. Within my network of churches, we've grown over the last 20 years. And I think 20 years ago, and for 15 years, the major strategy was church planting, starting new churches, often with younger leaders who were culturally kind of more flexible. And so in many cities and larger towns, and it was often into larger cities and places with students and young people, new churches were planted that grew quickly. But we've realized in the last few years the vital importance of revitalizing. Most of the churches in our network are probably between 80 and 150 people. They're not big churches. We've got some large churches. Most are sort of medium-sized churches, but there are also lots of small churches, something like 200 churches with less than 35 people. They're in communities that need the gospel. Often they have a building that's available to be used. And actually, revitalization has become a very significant strategy for gospel growth. So we've been sort of had a staff member. I appointed a staff member to oversee revitalization, and Jonathan has now taken on that role of caring for small churches. So we see revitalization as a crucial part of our strategy, but we've learnt that we need to take account of the culture. So what is the cultural context of Europe for church revitalization? And I think we need to take account of that big cultural situation in which we find ourselves. Now, I don't pretend to understand the culture in all your different places. And actually, one of the challenges is Europe doesn't have a single culture. There's actually a multiplicity of cultures that are overlapping in Europe. So I'm not an expert on all of the cultures. But I do think it's vital to grasp that Europe is very different, particularly to America. Essentially, much of Europe is post-Christian, and large parts of Europe are pre-evangelical, if I can put it that way. In other words, large parts of Europe are post-Christian. They used to be Christian. People were churchgoers, and there was a strong evangelical church. That would be my context in Britain. Britain has a strong evangelical history, but there has been massive church decline for 150 years. And so the result is that we are post-Christian and the evangelical church is very small. In Britain today, there are probably no more than about 2 to 3% evangelical believers of 65 million people. So maybe 2 to 3. So it's a pretty small base. And that means to say there isn't a vast pool of people looking for good church. There aren't a vast pool of people who used to be in evangelical churches but have left them for some reason. And that's compounded by the fact that over the last 20 years, there's been a lot of church planting and a lot of new churches started. And people have been drawn into those new churches. So the challenge for revitalization is that you're attempting to revitalize churches very often when there are other good churches that have been planted that people are going to. Does that make sense? And there isn't a vast pool of people to draw on. If you're in a city and there are millions of people, you can still gather a good number because there'll be, relatively speaking, quite a lot of Christians. But many revitalizations are in small communities, smaller towns, rural areas. And frankly, there aren't many people, let alone Christians. So the town that I'm in is about 25,000 people, which means on average, you would not expect more than 500 kind of Christians within that community. Many revitalizations are in areas that are far smaller than that. And that's the challenge that we find ourselves in. So it's a post-Christian context with a very small number of evangelicals. A recent survey in the UK said 48% of people identify as Christian, but the truth is they have no understanding what Christianity is. Only 7% of those would describe themselves as practicing Christians, which means they ever go to church. The majority of people, and increasingly amongst young people, they are secular, non-Christian, and they have what you might call a prejudice against evangelicalism. They have a negative view of evangelicals. They see evangelicals as perhaps intolerant, particularly over issues like LGBTQ rights. They see evangelicals associated with American right-wing politics. so they are alienated from evangelicalism. And that's the reality of the context in which we're operating. That means to say, for us, church revitalization is usually dependent on larger churches sending people to churches that are being revitalized. So it often requires partnership between larger churches that have a vision for revitalizing smaller churches because they see the gospel need and the gospel potential. Otherwise, revitalization has to be evangelistic and reaching people who are lost and not Christians, and churches will only grow by the conversion. But that, of course, is much slower and longer term work. So that, I think, is the context in which we are sort of ministering. Now, we're at a post-Christian, in some ways, post-evangelical situation. And in some situations in Europe, I recognize the cultural background is different to that. So some parts of Europe have never been evangelical or have had a very small evangelical church. So the context is different, for example, in areas of Europe which have been predominantly Catholic in background, where there might be a very small kind of number of evangelicals. And there is a sense that somehow sort of evangelicalism is contrary to national identity, because national identity is bound up with being Catholic, even if people are sort of not particularly engaged with the Catholic Church, even if they sort of are disaffected from Catholicism. They're not naturally going to turn to evangelicalism. It's a much harder challenge and situation. In some kind of Catholic countries, the church is increasingly post-Catholic, again, particularly because of child sex abuse scandals. So the situation that I would know best in that regard is Southern Ireland, where in Southern Ireland, the Catholic Church is collapsing, basically because of scandals of child abuse. But that doesn't mean to say that people are turning to evangelicalism. They're actually becoming deeply hostile to religion altogether because of that experience. And then you actually have a very different context in Europe, which is in some of the kind of former communist countries in Europe. I think that is a different context because, again, in some of those countries, there was a period of great evangelical growth after the ending of communism. And churches grew, churches were planted, ministries were established. So there was very rapid evangelical growth and great fruit. But I think in many of those cases, that momentum has not been sustained, particularly as people have become more secular and become wealthier. The outlook of the younger generation has changed. And sometimes leadership has been kept by those who were faithful under communism, but have maintained a leadership style and a culture of tradition that no longer connects with younger people. So the result is you have churches that have declined, that need revitalizing, but it's a very different context. Now, I'm conscious that is a very broad picture of the different contexts in which we find ourselves. But I think we need to understand the reality as we think about church revitalization and what it will take. So in some places, church revitalization works well simply by providing new leadership, more contemporary ministry, evangelistic outreach, and that will transform a church. But in many cases where a church needs revitalizing, it's much harder than that, and it's much slower than that. I think really the big thing I'm trying to say is just that we need to appreciate that and understand it as we devise our strategies and how we're going to revitalise. And in particular, I think for Europeans, we can't quickly borrow American models and assume that they will work in our post-Christian context. So that's really the big idea, understanding what we're, in a sense, facing. It's the challenges of post-Christian Europe, in which people have become alienated from church, and for different reasons might have a negative view of church, and where there isn't a large number of people who are kind of, in a sense, open to Christianity, if only we can reconnect with them. The other challenge in many churches, particularly in my context, is the problem of age. So the problem with many churches is that the congregations and leaders are drawn from an older age group. It's the younger people who are absent from churches, and they tend to be in the cities rather than in other locations. And that makes, again, revitalization a difficult challenge. You're all probably thoroughly depressed thinking about that. My goal is not to depress you, but I do think we need to be realistic. And that means to say we need to rejoice when God is at work and churches are revitalized, because God is at work. Churches are being revitalized. There is gospel growth. There are conversions. It's just very often slow and hard. So I'm not wanting to discourage you at all. I just think we need to have that realism about what it will take. And particularly when people do embark on church revitalization, it's really important that they know what to expect and what it will require. That we're not suggesting this is going to be easy and straightforward. In most places, it won't be. So I think a realism coupled with faith is really important in all ministry, but also in this work of church planting. So there's the big picture. I think that's what I might call the big macro context in which we're ministering. But we also need to pay attention to the micro context of where a particular church is located that we're seeking to revitalize. So we can think about the big picture of the background, but actually each church is located in a specific place, in specific circumstances, and we need to pay attention to that aspect of the culture as well. And there are a number of key issues that might be relevant to the cultural context of a church which will affect revitalization. Some of these I've referred to. I think location is crucially important. What is the specific location of a church? Because seeking to revitalize a church in a city where you have lots of people who are perhaps willing to travel to come to a church, that is very different from revitalizing a church in a sort of a context of a small town, where maybe in a small town, the population is stable, there aren't new people regularly moving in, and people know the community and they know the churches in the community. So in a city, you've got lots of people to draw from, and very often in cities, you've got lots of new people arriving all the time. And in that context, revitalization is likely to look different from a situation where you're in a small town and you haven't got those new people and you've got a much smaller pool. Even more if you're working in a rural context. And one of the things we're finding is it is incredibly difficult to sustain churches in rural contexts just because of the very sort of small populations, very few of whom are believers. So in my country, there are lots and lots of villages. They've got chapels and churches in them that 150 years ago were full, but now they're not. It's partly just to do with the location and the fact that there aren't as many people there. So location is hugely important. And of course, the location will affect the particular culture. So in cities, people tend to be more progressive. They tend to be culturally sensitive, tend to be kind of younger. That will affect the nature of the ministry. One of the reasons that often churches in cities need revitalizing is because they have an older leadership that has lost touch with the culture. They are sort of more traditional, more conservative in practice, and that doesn't connect with the city population. Many smaller towns are more conservative in culture. They're not as progressive. They're not the same as the city. People have a different outlook. They're not as cosmopolitan. The issues they're concerned about are not the same. And so certainly in Western Europe, you actually are beginning to see very different voting patterns in cities and in small towns and rural areas. Broadly speaking, cities, certainly in my context, tend to vote for more progressive, left-wing liberal parties, overwhelmingly. In small towns and rural areas, they tend to vote more for conservative, populist, traditional parties. That just reflects the different cultural context. And therefore, ministry will need to be contextualized. So, for example, a person who might be very able to revitalize a church in a city center or a city context might be somebody younger. They might be somebody who is hip, trendy, cool, youthful. They may be very successful at revitalizing in a city. Put them in a small town and a village, and the church will not be revitalized. It's context. So it's not just the broader context, it's the specific context of where the church is located needs to be taken into account in revitalization. The location, the demography, the age profile, the outlook of the people. And also the specific history of the church. So every church has its own unique individual culture, which is formed by its history. You know, who has been part of the church? What has the church done? What reputation with its community? All of those factors are crucially important. And I think maybe the important thing that I'm trying to say there is that means that in revitalization, you can't simply have a single strategy that works everywhere. The strategy needs to be appropriate for the different places and the locations of the churches that takes account of the culture. How does that work out then in practice? What does this actually mean? Why is it important to think about culture? Well, I think that helps us when we think about revitalization to think carefully about why a church needs revitalizing. Actually, the first key in revitalization, I think, is to understand why the church has declined and what is stopping it growing. So when we're engaged in church revitalization, we're inherently thinking about churches that have declined or are not growing. Maybe they might have been growing and thriving works in the past, but they're not now. That's why we're thinking it needs revitalizing. And you have to ask the question, why? Why does this church need to be revitalized? How has it got to this position? What's caused it to decline? And actually, I think it is at least in part to do often with cultural factors. The broader context for ministry. It may well just be that the church is smaller and has declined because all churches are smaller and have declined. That's part of the background decline of Christianity. But there may be more specific reasons why a particular church has declined. Very often, in my experience, church decline is often driven by a leadership weakness. Very often the reason why the church has declined is because a leadership has become older and less effective. Very often the leadership has not responded to changes in the wider culture. And they've kept a loyal group of people in the church, but have not reached new people. They've actually thought that being faithful has meant not changing. And the result is that the church has declined. Maybe the church has become in conflict with the culture and sees the culture as the enemy rather than seeking to win people with the gospel and recognizing the culture needs to change. So it's often leadership weakness. And actually, I think we do need to recognize that there are leaders who have been faithful, and it's difficult to adjust to cultural change. It's really hard for leaders to have to rethink how they do things in order to be effective in a different culture. So I'm not blaming leaders. One of the hardest things in ministry is to keep up with cultural development so that we can bring the gospel to bear in ways that are effective. But often it's leadership. It may well be a kind of a traditionalism in the way that things are done in the church. So the church might reflect a culture of the past so that people coming in feel they don't belong here. If people feel they're coming to a museum rather than a community that is relevant to them, the church will not grow. There are far too many churches that in the end are cultural museums that will tell you what life was like 30 years ago. They belong to a former culture. It's not quite the same, but it's kind of like visiting the equivalent of an Amish community. Not as extreme as that, but you still walk in and you think, this is not the culture of today. And churches like that generally don't grow. The culture is a key part of it. They might be faithfully holding to biblical truth. They might be doing the things the Bible says you should do, preaching, caring for people, trying to do evangelism. But somehow it's got stuck culturally. In a way, you might say in Bible terms, it's the equivalent of the church remaining Jewish in culture and failing to reach the Gentiles. One of the massive things in the New Testament is as the gospel went out from sort of Judea to the rest of the world, the culture needed to change. So people didn't walk into church and think, I'm joining Judaism. So the church had to learn not to worry about what food people ate, not to worry about whether they were circumcised or not, not to worry about whether they were meeting on the Sabbath. Those cultural things were not the heart of the gospel. So there could be tremendous flexibility. So that's a key issue, of the culture. And those cultural barriers are barriers to evangelism and to growth. There may well be spiritual weakness in the church. It may well be that there is a loss of faith or a loss of doctrinal faithfulness. The church might have compromised, and that is causing growth. But another factor, again, that is cultural that we need to bear in mind is that it may well be the reason for the decline of a church is because of competitor churches that are doing a better job. Again, we need to be honest about that. Some churches have declined because people have chosen to go to other churches in the area that are more effective, that are more connected with the culture and that are growing. Again, we've seen that in particularly cities or in communities in which there are sort of a larger community in which there can be several churches. The reason a church might have declined is because somebody else has started a new church, which is reaching people, or somebody else has revitalized a church and people will naturally go there. Now, at one level, we don't want churches to be competitive in that way, but it is a reality. And the reason why a church might have declined is because of that context. And therefore, that is going to impact on revitalization and whether you can revitalize and how you can revitalize. So if the fundamental problem is there's another good church people are going to, actually, it may be very difficult to revitalize. You can make it the revitalized church. You can actually do all of the things the good church people are going to are already doing, but it won't mean that people go to the church that's being revitalized because they're already somewhere else. That makes sense? In that situation, you may actually need a partnership with the competitor church so that they see the value of revitalizing and they support it and they help make it happen because there's a good gospel reason to do it. You almost need the competitor church to be saying, for the sake of the gospel and reaching more people, this church needs to be revitalized and we'll help that. So I think the culture and the context is hugely important to why the church needs revitalizing. If we understand the problem, then that means we're much better placed to think about how to help the church be revitalized. It follows from that that the other key, I think, help of thinking about the wider culture and cultural context is to have realistic expectations. Realistic expectations for those who are leading the revitalization, and also realistic expectations for the congregation that are being revitalized. And what I mean by that is a sort of an awareness of what the scale of the challenge is, how quickly you can expect growth and change. So people will become disappointed and discouraged if we give them the impression that if only they engage in church revitalization, suddenly their church will be full again in a short period. Often it's a long, slow work of revitalizing and growing the church. It requires sustained commitment, financing. And often the thing that it needs most of all is leaders who are in it for the long term. Revitalization requires leaders with real stickability. I think revitalization, except outside of the big cities where effectively it's a plant in a building, in most cases it will require somebody who's prepared to minister in the same place faithfully for years and years to revitalize the church. It won't be quick. Often there won't be quick growth. The kind of thrusting younger entrepreneurial pastor is probably not going to be particularly effective in most revitalizations, because they'll become discouraged by how slow it is. And in many revitalizations, it requires a real pastoral sensitivity and wisdom to be able to keep on board the people who are already in the church and to persuade them to be willing to change. They need to be drawn in to the changes rather than alienated by them. And that requires a certain level of maturity and skill to be able to lead cultural change. So I think expectations, what it will look like, what it will take, and also thinking through what is the norm for healthy churches in the particular context. So what do normal healthy churches in the particular country, in that kind of location, look like? That's the, as it were, the model or the measure for what success might be. So what would a healthy church in that kind of context, in that culture and country, what would it normally look like? So I say this to my leaders a lot of the time. There's no point looking at the big city churches and thinking that's what you ought to be like. They're big like that because of where they are. If your church and you were ministering there, you'd probably have a church like that. It's not because you're doing something wrong and they're doing something right. Often it's simply to do with where they are. So I think it's helpful to understand that you've got to make assessments on what success is in the light of the culture. And that's actually really important for revitalization strategies. Because if we have, as churches or denominations, revitalization strategies, the question people are always wanting to ask is, has it worked? Has it been successful? Which means that everybody's setting metrics to measure what success looks like. But the problem is, if you don't have culturally sensitive metrics, you won't be able to judge whether or not you've been successful. And that has to be determined by the particular culture. So set realistic expectations. And then lastly, I think all of that cultural understanding of the wider context, the particular context, can feed into developing a revitalization strategy. It's really there to help you know what needs to change in order for churches to be revitalized. And with that cultural background, what can be changed? So what areas of church life realistically can be changed and done differently? And again, the culture helps you to understand if there are things that can't be changed. There might be, for some churches and individuals in some contexts, some non-negotiables, some things that can't be changed and would be damaging to change. And the thinking about the culture helps to identify that. And then, of course, that then leads you to be better placed to know how to bring about change, how to implement change. And implementing change basically requires you to give people a vision for a better future, what it could be like, to persuade and win people over to that change, and then to enable it to be implemented. So I think understanding the culture and the background is helpful to thinking through those practicalities of how church revitalization is to be done. So I hope that's been helpful to just think about these issues. The big message is simply, we can't ignore the culture when we go about church revitalization. We can't ignore the culture, the big culture of the context that we're in our part of Europe. And we can't ignore the culture of the specific church that we're seeking to revitalize. And as I said at the beginning, thinking about 1 Corinthians 9, I think it's thoroughly biblical to think about the culture. Ministry always has to be contextualized. And for Paul, the willingness to understand culture and then minister appropriately was crucial to his desire to see as many people reached with the gospel as possible. And in the end, that's what church revitalization is all about, isn't it? We don't want churches to be revitalized simply because we think it's a good idea to have bigger churches and buildings being used, or because we want our denomination or group to be bigger than others. Ultimately, it's about seeing people reached with the gospel. We want churches to be revitalized because of a conviction that it's through the church that God reaches people and brings them into his kingdom. Fundamentally, church revitalization is an evangelism strategy for the growth of the gospel. That's why it's important, but that's also why we need to take account of culture.